When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, chickens. This is the fabulous Adam Richard, and I have a theory. Oh, hello, chickens. Still talking about Curse of the Black Spot, the Matt Smith episode with the with Captain Crawley. Now, I've had a massive email from Paul. Paul was very disappointed that I did not love the, you know, the waning years of Moffat, that I kind of almost jumped off board watching Doctor Who during Capaldi until I was dragged kicking and screaming back into watching it because it was my job because I went and worked on Whovians. And he sent me a whole bunch of emails, which I want to get to because he's kind of done this massive précis of what's been going on in the Moffat era, the links between seasons and episodes and everything that links backwards and forwards. So, of course, he's very excited that I'm doing a Matt Smith Moffat story and has sent me a huge email about Curse of the Black Spot. So let's get into it. He says, pros, 5 minutes in, Eleven is lapping up his impending demise off a plank, which, you know, the Doctor on a plank, great. And also, you know, what a great, given where this sits in the season, we've just seen him die. We've just seen him be killed during regeneration, you know, in the two episodes previous. So him kind of being all lackadaisical about his death on the plank is like, yeah, you don't know what's coming for you. Amy back to her Kissogram outfit days. Yes, the first time we see Amy in season five, she's dressed as a policewoman, but she's not a policewoman, she's a Kissogram. And here she is doing cosplay again, which she's great at. And she looks amazing in an outfit. Like, Karen Gillan just, you know, has amazing stature, like looks incredible in a thousand different things. And I think she's, you know, I think she's really engaging. Like, I kind of love her. It's, has anyone seen the Jumanji movies? She's so much fun. Like, they're fun movies. The one with Awkwafina channeling Danny DeVito is possibly my favorite thing I've ever seen. It's like Muppet Treasure Island. It is crazy and silly and makes no sense. And it's got, what's her name? The dog from from Game of Thrones. It is just, it's mad. A sailor using an actual firearm adds to the atmosphere. Okay, groovy, very Scooby-Doo. Loving these pros. The siren makes an impressive entrance, eerie voice and vicious-looking touch. The transition when Amy counteracts is a cracker. The TARDIS actually picking up the spaceship's distress call through the temporal rift was a nice twist on what was assumed at the beginning. Yeah, because they've turned up and they said, oh, we've heard that you're in distress. And it's like, you know, they don't really explain how they know the ship's in distress, but then, oh, obviously that spaceship that's attached to the seafaring vessel was the one that was in distress. The patient room takes me back to Tacoma with Michael Douglas. Oh, I don't think I've seen that one. I've seen some movies called Coma. There's a lot of them. Cons. Rory trying to catch a sword midair. Oh, yeah, Rory. The Doctor could have just lifted the lid on the barrel. Didn't need to sonic it. I know. That's a little... But you kind of go, I reckon that was just something that happened in the moment. He's just going, bzzz. Although did he maybe there was a scene cut where he locked all of the barrels so that the, you know, the creature couldn't get out of the reflections. I don't know. Maybe he'd pre-sonicked it and we just didn't see that scene. Who knows? Other con that Paul says is the anticlimactic nature to the big bad does ruin the episode as a monster of the week adventure. And I kind of found that with, you know, there were a couple of the Jodie Whittaker episodes where it turned out there wasn't a giant evil. There was just a misunderstanding. And it kind of makes you go, oh, is that all there is? Same with Twice Upon a Time, the final Peter Capaldi story, where it seems like, you know, there's so much going on. There's these glass people. Bill's a glass person. They've got to go and see the Dalek. Like, there's heaps happening. The first Doctor's there. And then you find out that there's been no kind of malicious intent. It's just been an accident in the very far future. And it's a nice thing. And it's kind of like, kind of pulls the rug out from under you. And you're like, well, what was everyone running and screaming about? If the Doctor had just stayed still for 2 minutes and asked a question, all of this could have been avoided. So, yeah, I totally get that. It's fine. We'll live. There's like 800 episodes of Doctor Who. They can't all be gems. Paul goes on, as with Legend of the Sea Devils, the pre-credit sequence sets up the setting, characters and the mystery ahead. The black spot is such a simple way to ramp up the tension. After watching heaps of 13 recently, I can really see the qualities she doesn't have. 11 is fluid with his overindulgence in movements and portrayal of the script. I'd describe 13 as scratching your nails on a chalkboard. Well, look, it's not for everybody. Amy and Rory aren't just tag-alongs and in the way during this outing. There's enough for them to do without encroaching on the Doctor and story. I enjoy the Captain as I see an underlying pain in his choice of lifestyle. There are many parallels between Avery and the Doctor. Both are wise, old in age, but more importantly, they have a care for others despite the lifestyles they both live. Oh, that's an interesting take. The Siren is a fantastic villain for three quarters of this episode, but then she isn't. Though I enjoy the twist by the end and its subsequent explanations, it does deflate the tension built up. The next episode, The Doctor's Wife, does have a massive nostalgic nature to it, though it ensures that whatever is built up doesn't collapse by the end. In fact, it does the exact opposite. The snippets of Madame Kavarian, Rory's death and Amy's pregnancy mystery don't interfere with the story, but add the reminder that there's more going on than just some fun on a ship. The actual science fiction parts of this episode are played out well. The Doctor minimises his use of the sonic, plenty of sci-fi lingo while he's explaining to Avery the TARDIS controls, a stalled TARDIS due to it believing space isn't where it should be. Neat that the Siren identified this as a sickness and retrieved the TARDIS to its bay. The way the Doctor explains why there are two ships occupying the same space, similarities to the girl in the fireplace. Yes, indeed. Very similar. The soundtrack is enjoyable and makes it feel like a pirate story. Murray Gold has a knack of creating attention-grabbing themes that complement exactly what's on screen. Listen very carefully when the Pons are off to bed, as in between all the TARDIS sounds is a season-wide theme that fills your mind while Eleven is trying to understand what he's seeing. Oh, because he's looking at the pregnancy thing. I love this stuff, and throughout Eleven's time we're privileged to get many of these instances. Sadly, 13's era for me has none of this. Also, I love all the constant TARDIS sounds, whether it's short-lived cloister bell dong, stalled TARDIS, or all the little quirky blips. I love TARDIS noises too. I gotta say, I do love Sagan Akinola's music. Like, I like listening to it without watching the show, but Murray Gold's music I find kind of too bombastic to listen to on its own. I mean, I went to the concert. I saw the Melbourne Symphony Orchestra play the music and it was fun. But it just feels so big and overwhelming. It's kind of like, whereas Sagan Akinola's music, I kind of like, it feels atmospheric. It's like, it's really good for spooky. Like when Doctor Who is spooky, his music really works. Whereas I find Murray Gold's music is kind of like, there's a spooky thing happening. The Everybody Lives conclusion to the episode, Paul says, is acceptable as what we thought were deaths weren't. It's much better than what happens in Knock Knock. Oh, yeah, Knock Knock was... the sailors living out their time in the sea of space is a sci-fi fan's dream. I know, I want to see more piratey people in space. It's fun. One other thing I've pointed out that happens during many of 13's episodes is a constant theme rehashed over and over during the episode to the point of it getting on your nerves. 11 has an example of this when he keeps misreading the siren's motives. However, it's written well enough that it's noticeable but not detracting. In this instance, 11's bubbly self-deprecating nature pays it off. 13, for me, has never found her feet. So more often than not, these script choices collapse for Jodie. Some episodes feel out of place in a season. I believe this one was in the correct spot. Season 6 has a huge underlying story, so you need one off strategically placed. Purely viewing this as a standalone episode does work, but the hints at more to come wouldn't make sense. I never found anyone on screen frustrating and or overplaying their roles. Well cast and right amount of characters on screen. There's enough here to warrant future watches, though it would fit better in a complete season rewatch. Yeah, but who's got time? This episode follows, in my opinion, a cracking two-part season opener, The Impossible Astronaut and Day of the Moon. At the conclusion to the latter, we see a young Melody Pond slash River Song begin the regeneration process in an alley. This is one of many ripping cliffhanger moments throughout the season. However, just like how Praxeus doesn't pick up immediately on the revelations in Fugitive of the Jadoon, it's slightly unfortunate we get a standalone story. Though a little breathing room can be good, especially with plenty of timey-wimey in future episodes. The writer Stephen Thompson has two other Doctor Who scripts alongside this one, Journey to the Centre of the TARDIS, which we've done and I enjoyed as a standalone, not needing all the ongoing Clara stuff, and Time Heist. Oh, I like that one too. These episodes I doubt will make any top 10 lists as all three have intriguing concepts and setups, but all stumble in their respective conclusions. Yeah, they all do have a kind of like a weird sort of, oh, it's finished now. You know what I like about Time Heist? It's got Keely Hawes and old mate from Bridgerton. What is interesting is both this and Legend of the Sea Devils are approximately 45 minutes each. This episode, however, I think pays off better. Yeah, I would agree. And In a Good Man Goes to War, Avery and Toby make a short appearance. I know, because I watched that one for the Flight Through Entirety podcast. Speaking of which, the episode that came out last week or the week before is about Chris Chibnall's episode The Power of Three from the seventh series of Doctor Who. So you can listen to me joining in on that. Plus, I'm also in an episode of the Big Squid podcast, but I'll talk about that more in the next episode.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.